Good morning, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and Dwayne, I put a message in the text box for you. I was busy getting ready for the net and couldn't respond, so maybe ask the question during the net or maybe after the net. But everyone, this is SouthCars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SouthCars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control actually for this session is Gary, KC2RMO. His location is Vero Beach, Florida, or Syracuse, New York. My name is Kathy, and my call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and my location is Vero Beach, Florida, where it's currently 73 degrees, high today of about 79, and low tonight of about 60, but a very beautiful start today, the day, and I can't wait to get out and enjoy it. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, how about any of those stations who have a birthday on a yearly basis? If you're one of those birthday stations, we'd sure like to pick you up at the beginning. So if you're having a birthday, come aboard. No birthday stations either. You know, that means we're not getting any older. You know, this is the Sunday morning ride, too. The purpose of this net is to bring our members and non-members together in a relaxed and informal atmosphere to enjoy a moderated rag chew. Our topic this morning to start things off is how did you get started in hamming? And you know, I have a lot of things that I'd like to share, and we hope that you do as well. I want to advise everyone that the sessions are recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. So if you've been part of the presentation, you most definitely will be part of that recording. If you haven't had a chance, please check out our website. Once again, that's www.voip.southcars.com. Some very nice pictures about Mardi Gras and some very informative information. So with that, Mr. Gary, sorry to hear that you may be coming down with what Stephanie has, and let's hope not. Take that vitamin C. But I'm going to turn it over to you so you can begin this morning's session. KC2RMO from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Well, you know, it's our motto. Thanks, Kathy, number one. But it's our motto here that, you know, share and share alike. And so now I'm getting my share. I just had a big old glass of orange juice before the net here about 10 minutes ago. So hopefully we'll keep that vitamin C level up and we'll be able to fight this off. But it's starting to feel like the creeping crud for sure. So anywho, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. We have 16 degrees with big fluffy flakes falling out of the sky here in Syracuse's beautiful outer Comstock section, also known as Vero Beach North. Our topic this morning, as Kathy said, is how I got started in ham radio. What sparked your interest? And that is an intentional pun. Did you have an individual that got you started and maybe became your Elmer? Did you start your journey on your own? What were your earliest ham experiences? We want to know. Let me just buy a nickel. Okay, we had an RF station in there that apparently was trying to access, but you don't want to do that right now. So back off, you know, it'll be okay. But at any rate, The topic this morning, it's all about how you got started in ham radio on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. Let's get started with some check-ins. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars looking for check-ins right now.
Six, Victor.
Take a stab at it, Gary. Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Sierra United November.
In Zulu, India, Victor.
Well, that's a good way to get going right there. Great. Got a bunch of good stations here. Let's get things going with Six Victor. Good morning, Gordon.
Yeah, good morning, Northern Vero. Thanks, Gary. Seemed to me that you were involved with things here last night, too. Good for you. Good morning, South Cars. Gordon, KY6V. I'm bumbling around here. I slept in this morning. I've been up about an hour, but I'm not really totally conscious, and I'm working on my first cup of coffee. Good subject. We're currently at 65 degrees, romping to about 78 I see for the day, then plummeting to about 55 tonight. But the sun's already out, looks great, light winds, no rain in sight, so we're going to have a beautiful day down my neighborhood anyway. HF number is 371. I think a number of people out there have already heard my story. Let me buy a nickel here. But I was sort of born into the hobby, Gary. I jokingly like to refer that when I was born, which was January of 1937, by the way, and that makes me now 77 years young. When I came out and faced the world, I had a carbon microphone in my left hand and a Vibraplex CW speed key in my right. And it's been that way ever since. I was born into an all-ham family. My father was first active in 1921 with Spark Gap. His call was W6ZP. My mother's call was K6EEE. He took me aside when I was about 10, and this was just after the closing of World War II. Started teaching me the code. He was an excellent speed demon with CW. He had sat commercial press wireless and Mac-A radio ship-to-shore circuits, and he was a whiz. Well, anyway, he was my mentor. That's how it got started. I was already over 20 words a minute when I took my first license in January of 1949 at the age of 12. And it's been a continuous story, no breaks, and I've loved every moment of it. Go ahead, sir, from KY6V.
That's a great story, you know. We all need somebody at some point in our early careers to say, you know, don't touch that, you're going to get electrocuted, you know, that sort of thing. You really do. I know in my case, it was kind of an interesting trip. I started out, I think I was about, I don't even know why, you know, I always had this fascination with AM broadcast signals first when I was a little kid, you know, 8 or 9 years old. Coming from long distances, and then the neighborhood that we lived in was this great, and this just great neighborhood, this very diverse and almost magical neighborhood. You had everybody there. You had machinists and symphony conductors and senators, and you know, everybody lived in that neighborhood. It was a great mix, and a lot of those guys were hams. And or shortwave listeners, but it was you know, you had that exposure, and so I became doubly fascinated at that point. You know, you'd go next door. My mom would be visiting Mrs. Davis next door, and Mr. Davis, you know, was on 15 or 40 meters, and he's just rocking and rolling, and he was the guy that tuned me into Sputnik when it was orbiting the Earth. He had it set up so you could listen to Sputnik. You know, those cool things, you know, were my exposures. Let me just buy a nickel. And finally, I got to the point when I was working after school at the drugstore, and the guy that ran the drugstore was a ham. And we got to talking about it one day, and he said, "Well, you ought to become a ham too." And he gives me his old ARRL manual, and he said, "Go to it." And so I started working on it. The theory and it was fine. It took me a while to get up to, oh, I don't know, 10 words a minute code. I never took the test. I got rocking and rolling and playing in garage bands and stuff like that. So it was a long time after that. I didn't get my license until it's been 7 years now. It took a while to do that, but it was worth it. You're right. The journey never ends, and it's always worth it. But thank you, Gordon. And I do hope have yourself a cup of coffee. I'm on coffee cup number two here, and I'm going for number three. Maybe we'll do another glass of orange juice too. But I hope we hear from you again during the net. We move on to George Lima Charlie Bravo. Come aboard, sir.
Well, thank you, Gary. And KW4 Lima Charlie Bravo. Great day after hearing Gordon and you. I guess I'm the black sheep of the family there. I guess I first, kind of got into a radio when we tied two tin cans together with a piece of string and got about a 30-foot kind of started this old mind just to going and did a whole lot of AM listening, being right down in the Keys, kind of being bombarded, signals, and found out what that little old screwdriver can do on a receiver and just kind of attuned there. It brought me later on into a lot of hams kind of turned their nose on 11-meter people, and that's where I got my start, in radio there, and I enjoy talking with people, and I saw radio was the opportunity to be able to get in touch with different folks and just kind of find out the way they look at things, very good tool. So that started me on my road to a ham radio, especially we used to screw up quite a bit. We had some ham operators come down and cuss us out and threaten us with FCC, and instead of they offering help, correct the problem, they rather threaten us and all. But that's the same bunch, you got there up on 80 meters that it caused me to say, well, if that's the way you want to play, I just kind of get legal-like and we'll play that way. But had a change of heart since then, and what can I say? It's a wonderful way to go. Come up with some more later. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Hey George, great story. It's funny. You listen to the different stories from all the different areas. I think it must have been particularly cool to be growing up, getting your feet wet, listening to signals down in the Florida Keys. How cool that would be. I remember, how amazing it was. I thought it was like, a big deal when I was pulling in Canada. I'm 100 miles from Canada, I just thought that was a big deal. But how awesome that must have been to listen to that. And yeah, you're right about some of those guys on 80. 80's not not my favorite band. I don't know. You know, I between the fact that I don't have the antenna for 80 and I'm not really thrilled with it anyway. I'm more 40 and below, you know, or 40 and above, that's my meat and potatoes. But thank you, George, and again, hope we'll hear from you. We had Pete checking in there, and Pete, you were kind of pressed for time, so we're gonna grab you. So come on in, OVI, to the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. This is South Cars, and I'm KC2RMO. Go ahead, Pete.
This is KD4OSK-VIC-India. I hope everybody can hear me this morning. I'm trying out my deal again here and see if I can get in on board here again. So if somebody put something in the test box, I appreciate it, so I can maintain my composure. Anyway, I started an 11-meter band I think a lot of people started an 11-meter band, to be frank with you. And I kind of like to, it was a group I was with in Miami, and they kind of pushed me into getting the license. I said, okay, would I take it? There was a church about a mile or two away from them, and they knew the VEs and everything else, and they kind of put me in there, and I said, okay, I'll take it, and took it, and lo and behold, I passed in the first time. I didn't have to go back. I was the latest for that. I did not stop with amateur radio. I also got my duly qualified commercial license with radar endorsement. I didn't stop there. I got also a safety distress operator and maintenance license. So I got a grand total of about, four different type licenses in the commercial region. So, but I never did, and I'm still kicking myself about not getting myself a general license. I failed to do that. I'm going to one day sit down and go through my books again, and maybe I can get my general license. And who knows? I might take my my master license too, and that could be done with it. But that's the history of my involvement in radio. I've been since I was out of high school. I've been in electronics for many, many years in the commercial end of it. Was in manufacturing and electronics for over 20 years, and I enjoyed it. I also had a couple of years in the service in electronics, so I'm really hepped up on electronics, being also in customer service in all other arrangements. I was in engineering for a while. So that's my resume on electronics from this end, from KD4OSK-VIC-India. And besides, let me tell you something. I was in a hurry. I was just trying to have a little joke in mind. KD4OSK-VIC-India, back to that.
Well, Pete, I'm honored to say that you've got the job. Hey, a quick question for you. Who did you work for? Who did in manufacturing? Who did you work for?
The medical electronics firm in Hialeah. And I enjoyed myself there. I mean, we had a really a good nice little organization down there. I was in all facets of electronics in there, so I enjoyed it. It was a medical electronics firm, over.
All right. I worked for General Electric for 7 years, so, you still have that that slow rise, that slow AGC, it sounds like. I don't know. You start out very low, and after about maybe 30 seconds or so, you come up to a normal volume, which is still a little low even when you come up to normal, but it's normal. You know, it's not full volume, but an acceptable volume. So you still have that slow rise on your audio.
Yeah, I can't help that right now unless I get a new audio card or if I reinstall this program, this software for the card. I have to ask this to the daily allowance. And now I've been having a tremendous amount of problems. The receiving wise is good. But I'm feeding my audio through a Sony amplifier and go into a Bose speaker system, so I receive you guys good. Occasionally I hear too much. Case in point, if somebody has a lot of bass, a little hum in the background, I can hear the hum, but it's that sensitive. If somebody doesn't have a proper grounding on the microphone, I can hear it, unfortunately. But I have to live with it because I got my system tuned up that way, Gary. Katie Frosty, like Kennedy.
Gotcha there. Yeah, I've got both speakers on the other computer, but it doesn't have as good transmit audio as this one does. So I go, you know, I'll let my compromise be the... be the receive audio rather than the transmit, because this is much, to my ear, much cleaner sounding than the other one. Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate you checking in this morning. I hope you're not too busy to check in again. We will move things along to Vero Beach South and K6SU on Good Morning, Kathy.
Well, good morning, Gary, and you're really not going to let me out of that, are you? South and North. I'm so used to saying Vero Beach as NCS, I apologize. But I have a little different beginning than most of you, and that's what I want to share this morning. You know, it all started back in 2008 when I was asked by someone at the time that I had a relationship with to get my ham license because it would be a way of communication. He lived in Michigan, and I at the time had just moved to Florida. So I had no interest because I didn't even know what hamming was all about. I thought it was a lost art, to tell you the truth, Gary. I remember seeing pictures, but I sure did not know it was available, and definitely as a female, why should I become involved in a hobby that all I saw was men? You know, I agreed. I studied for that technician license. I passed it, and I became licensed, and that was July 18th, 2008. Then that same individual connected to VOIP South Cars one day. He became a member. He liked the organization, and again, he encouraged me to join VOIP South Cars. This occurred, I believe, in August of 2008, and I remember my first contact. Let me pause for just a moment. That first contact was our one and only Gordon, KY6B, and from that time, I will say he has been my mentor and my Elmer and my encouragement. It is he who encouraged me to upgrade my license all the way to extra. And it was he that said I could even do things even though other people told me, no, you can't. And, you know, I was told that I did not have the electronic knowledge, and he sort of increased my encouragement there. But, you know, with that, I wasn't going to prove him wrong, and, you know, Gordon was that encouragement for me. I became licensed as a general June 2nd, 2010, and extra on January 11th, 2011, and received my current call, my vanity call, on May 22nd, 2010. So I want to share with you how nervous I was, Gary, the very first time I even thought of going on the air. You know, I was afraid I was going to make a mistake. Although I was apprehensive to start broadcasting worldwide on the air, it is through the warmth, the support, and the encouragement of all those in the South Cars family that have made me feel so welcomed and to what I said is a male-dominated hobby. I have seen South Cars VOIP increase in membership, and let me pause once again. You know, I haven't seen South Coast VOIP increase in membership and become an active part of many members and a very major part of my life. I have been through many changes in staff and procedures, but have enjoyed every part. So, you know, when Gordon asked for help, and I think that was the summer of 2009, I volunteered to help. And you probably know the rest of the story. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, and thanks for picking me up this morning.
Well, thanks, Kath, and I'll tell you right now, you cannot have a better person standing behind you than KY6V. Plain and simple. That's end of argument right there. That is the best, and he's the best, and we all know it too. So it's a great position to be in. You know, it's funny. You mentioned about your first contact, and that I think we're going to ask that the next round of check-ins about first contact. I remember my actual first contact was I'd gotten my technician license, and I think I've told this story a couple times too, where I was working in a as a support person for a telephone company, ISP. And we had about 100 folks sitting in that bullpen, and my buddy was also studying to be a hand. He's KC2RMN, and I'm KC2RMO, of course. And we would IM each other the questions for the tech exam back and forth. But I remember the very, you know, once I got my license, I had gotten my first radio was a Yaesu VX150. I still have it. I use it in the truck, and I've got on a simplex frequency. I'm calling six, you know, and I'm talking to him. He's like 2 miles away, you know, and I'm up on this hill talking to him with this VX150, and I said, you know, finally a real QSO. I got it, you know, and of course, a lot changed after that. But that was really something else. But you know, we all take that journey a little bit differently. In my case, you know, I had to do it pretty much on my own. You know, you were very fortunate to have that encouragement. And that support from Gordon, which is awesome. But we all get there. That's the main thing, you know, and it's pretty cool. And the sum of our experiences is what we have cooking here. Thank you, ma'am, for your story, and I do hope you will be joining us again in the net. We move along to ZIV. Come on aboard. We're talking about how you became a ham on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. This is South Cars.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's a long, long story. So I'm not going to say too many nickels in the jukebox. I'll just, as we go on to do, I'll explain a little bit. But, just from the beginning, I was at my babysitter. My babysitter, actually, Sir Alex, there's a lot of people. I shirt that as a lot of people on I call it Charlie Baker Band. You know, listening basically. To my dad, old Roadhog. I'd sit in his bedroom with him and listen to him talk to a lot of different individuals and listen to the Grand Ole Opry on the radio after we get done listening to all the 11 meter silliness, or whatever you want to call it. But then let me buy a nickel or plug in 2 bucks. My babysitter's husband was a CBer. I mean, it was 11 meter operator and Charlie Baker Band. And he encouraged my, and he's my dad's boss. My babysitter's husband was my dad's boss at where he worked at. And he encouraged him to get a Charlie Baker Band. So that's when I was, you know, and he gave me the handle Lamb Chop. And he gave my brother the handle Bonehead, because he's so stubborn. But, then I was always riding the bus to school and went past this spot right where I'm at now. And, about 7 years later, or more, and about 7 years later, we moved to this spot. And then my two brothers were into the Charlie Baker Band, but I wasn't. I was turned 14 and 77, and Elvis just passed away, and I crossed the street, and it was all over then. I started running the neighborhood. And getting into all kinds of trouble until I found out where I'm at today. I'm by a nickel and plug a few bucks, whatever you want to call it. And, then I, would listen to, then after I crossed the street, then I, lived in sin for backslid for a lot of the years until I was 27 and was totally ran over by a train from head to toe, and I came back. My mother wanted me to move back with them on sort of a border here at their home. And, I don't know, when I came out of the coma, I heard, the first word I heard when I came out of the coma, the thought in my head was, communicate. And you can see all that on the QRZ about that. So I ain't gonna go into all that. I think it's all on there. And, going further, I better trail and go to the short story. I took a course in, at Hadley School for the Blind at Waunakee, Illinois. There's one Cis Man Radio operator that I talked to. Her name was her cousin, was worked there, and well, you didn't get no credit for it, but it was just one of the courses there, correspondence courses there. And that's how I, started, this is a long story. I'll tell you more later, if I may. I don't want to get some more people in here I don't take up too much time. I want to get as many people in as possible. November 9, Zulu India, Victor, for now.
Hey, thank you. That's quite a story, Larry. Wow. You know, we're talking about the way you became a ham. How did you get to become a ham? What path did you take? Did you have an Elmer? Did you do it on your own? And a couple of things coming out here in the net. And I had a couple of questions that I wanted to throw out for people. And they are, it's a two-part question. Do you remember your first rig? And do you remember your first contact? I know mine, other than sitting on the hill up on Westminster, talking to Mike out in Eastwood, when I had gotten my HF rig, my first HF rig. My first HF rig was a rig that I couldn't use. It was kaput. The power supply was no good. I bought an old HW101, a Heathkit HW101, and power supply was bad in it. And I said, well, I can either fix this, or I can just get something that's a little more modern. You know, I said, you know, probably a boat anchor probably isn't the best choice for a first rig, you know. So I said, all right, I'll be smart and I'll get something newer. So I bought an IC735, which I loved, and it was just a great rig for years for me. It finally VFO started getting a little flaky on it, and so I said, well, you know, Santa Claus is coming to town. I'll put an IC718 on the Christmas list, and Santa was good to me that year. But I remember that Heathkit, what a cool radio that was, just a cool looking radio, and would have been fun. I think it's, you know, at some time, at some point, I'm going to be getting myself another boat anchor, and I don't know if you heard that, but Steph in the background, it's like, that's what you think. Let me buy a nickel. But I'll be getting one of those by hook or crook. that was my first rig. But I did love that 735. That was just an awesome radio. And my first contact, other than Mike, was somebody, I can't remember his calls, but it was somebody out in Wisconsin. I remember. With that 735 hooked up to a slinky dipole, I talked to somebody out in Wisconsin on 40 meters. So that was my first contact. So there, we're talking about beginnings this morning, how you got started in ham radio, and this time around it's going to be your first rig and your first contact, and we would love to hear from you as we continue the Sunday Morning Rag Chew, taking check-ins right now.
K2RSJ.
Yes.
Victor Hotel.
6, Victor.
We have a whole bunch of people doubling there, but I think we got RSJ, VGS, Victor Hotel, and 6 Victor. Anybody else want to come aboard this time around?
Kilo, Alpha, Victor.
IEL?
Well, that's a full dance card. Awesome. Come on aboard, RSJ. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Call here is Kilo 2, Romeo, Sierra, Juliet. Name here is Rich. In Springfield, Delaware County, Pennsylvania. And if it's my turn, I'd be glad to share my my ham story.
We would love to hear from you. By the way, are you a South Cars member? If not, would you like information how to become a South Cars member?
Yes, actually I am. Several weeks ago, SUN had sent me all the information. I'm on the email list and get the emails every week with the topics, which I love. And I wanted to make sure I participated in this. Kind of an interesting story. I was originally licensed in 1983, back when I was in high school, and had a good close friend of mine, and we had started with CB radio in the cars, and then set up base stations and had a certain group. And along the way, my friend had met a ham radio operator, and we started looking into that and studied together, took the test together, and passed. And we joined the Mid-Atlantic Amateur Radio Club, where we met at the time, and these names should be pretty familiar to everybody here, Carter Craigie and Kay Craigie, who is now ARRL president. Carter, her husband, was KA3IME at the time, and also a professor at Cabrini College, which is where I ended up going. So I got heavily involved in ham radio at that time, and Carter and Kay were always on the cutting edge of technology in the early RTTY and packet days, and they had dual stations in their house and pretty cool stuff. So not only was I very involved, but had the opportunity to have Carter as my Elmer and be a part of that, and got to know him and Kay very well over those years. And obviously life goes on, and you know, graduate college, move along, move away, move back, and all that stuff, and I pretty much just dropped down to just doing two-meter work here and there, and hadn't really been in the hobby for quite some time, and decided this past fall, when I finally got settled in my new house here, that I'm in a situation to finally get a real rig on the air. So in December, went out, got a full rig, FT-857 tuner, off-center fed dipole, and got a dual band in the attic, which I'm talking on right now, and set up the station. But to answer your other questions, my first HF rig was a Hot Water 101 heat kit that was borrowed, and I got myself the cheapest MFJ tuner at the time and the cheapest meter at the time, and basically hung a wire out the window, and obviously a novice at that time, and my first contact, believe it or not, was all the way in the Twin Cities, out in Minnesota. So that was my first HF contact, and I've had various radios over the years, but have not had an HF rig since then. So I'm glad to get back on HF and, you know, dealing with the trials and tribulations of antenna setup and noise and all the other stuff, but having a good time and starting to make some contacts and starting to hear a lot of stuff. So I still keep in touch with Carter, who is now N3AO, I believe. He's down in Virginia. And we keep in touch through Facebook, and so they're great people, and was very honored to have the opportunity to have known both Carter and Kay at the time. And so still feel a very close connection to them, and obviously ham radio. So I'm glad I'm back in the hobby, dove into the deep end, and got a few of my friends that I'm getting in. One just got licensed last month, and hopefully get him upgraded to general here real soon. So
I think we had a little time out there. You want to try again? Okay, he may have to wait for the timer to come around, but it got off to a great start. I'll tell you, you couldn't get off to a better start than that, that's for sure. It's funny, too, when you think about it, how many people came in to the hobby through CB. It did spawn a lot of folks coming in. I kind of remember I'll admit, I stand before you with my arms raised and whatever. I actually did own one. I had it in my 1971 Duster. And it was about the coolest thing on the block, you know. So it was one of those. But thanks for checking in. That's a super story, and we're glad you're back in the hobby again. We'll move it along down the list and go to VGS as we continue how we got started in ham radio. This is the Sunday Morning Rag 2. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
Rob, we hear you just fine, loud and clear.
Okay. My first start in ham radio, amateur radio, whatever you want to call it, was to do with my dad. He was telling me that he knew quite a few amateurs in England. That's where my family's originally from. And it was during the Battle of Britain he got to meet some of these hams working in the various aspects of the electronic fields of the military. And he told me all about his adventures. So all that. So I went to the library and asked the librarian, do you have any books on ham radio? So she proceeded to show me all the books. I took as much books as I was allowed to take out at the time, eight, I believe. So I took eight different kinds of books on ham radio. Of course, I just soaked it all up what I read, it like a sponge. And boy, it made me want to get into it. So I told my dad I want to get into it. He says, okay, for Christmas we're going to go to the candy store. So we went to the candy store and he bought me my first receiver. It came with R1000. And boy, all the foreign broadcast stations came flooding in, as well as ham radio and listened to CW and all that. And it just was magic to my ears. So I kept listening to that for that while. So now fast forward 15 years, I sat down for my first exam and got it, my basic. And then 3 months later, the government announced that anybody with a basic license cannot build or any transmitting equipment. So I said to myself, well, I can afford that. So I studied for my advanced, your equivalent to your extra class, because you only have two licenses here. And I studied that and passed it, and I thought, well, now I can build anything under the sun regarding amateur radio. And so since then, it's been a world of magic. And my first contact, it was with my great friend who lived about 30 miles north of me at the time. I got to know him through going to a field day show that they put on, and he was the CW guy. He was in the Army, he was in the Signal Corps, and boy, could that guy throw CW out like anything. Anyways, and one of the great stories I had, once I had a handheld, and it was a VX7, and a guy came up on a motorbike and with his wife, and he said, what can you do with that, son? How far can you get? Just around the corner? So I thought, well, I looked at my dad and winked, and I went on IRLP and connected to my friend in Australia who has a node down there, and this guy's mouth just dropped. He's just seen it. I wish I could have taken a picture of it. Anyways, it was fun watching the expression. And then he turned to me and he said, I can get one of those. I said, you just pay the $20, study electronics and theory and all the regulations, and you got what I've got. Excuse me. I'll just time out for a second. And my first rig was FT-857 Delta. I still love that rig to this day. And it was amazing what that little thing could do. It was magic. Anyways, I'll turn it back to Net Control. This is Victor Echo 6, VGS, Rob in Silver Lake, Alberta. Over.
Hey, Rob. A lot of good stuff there. Always great to hear from folks from Canada, number one. I definitely say we love your country. We've been there many times, and it is one of our favorite places to go to. Our love for our first rigs. I want to get a tattoo of my 735. You know, the Hot Water 101. I don't really count as a first rig because it never worked. But my 735 was just. You know, that was it. That was a great radio. So I well understand that. You know, it's funny, you had brought back a lot of memories, just talking about some of those things. I remember, you know, studying, you know, the ARRL manual and trying to learn all that stuff, and you know, then trying to learn the questions for the quiz on my own. Of course, no internet back then, you know, couldn't do that. You brought back some memories as far as my first good receiver, which was made by Lafayette, and it was a Lafayette Explore Air Super Regen receiver. I think it's KT-135 was the nomenclature on it. It was awesome. I hooked the for an antenna. I used the metal bed springs, the bed frame. I hooked it up to that, and it worked. Worked great. You talk about all that magic pulling that stuff in. It's as real to me today as it was back then. It was just great. So yeah, I remember that, and that's another one I'd love to get back. So thanks for checking in this morning. Great to hear from you. We move down to Louisiana, and my friend Steve Victor Hotel, come on aboard.
Well, good morning, Gary, and good morning to everyone on board the net. This is Steve, KF5VH, from Lafayette, Louisiana, with 66 degrees and cloudy, looking at a high today of about 72. Now, since I can remember, there were always melodious tones of dits and dahs coming up from the basement of the house. I was fortunate to have a live-in Elmer. My father, K9YXO, was one that started in ham fairly early, and there was an HF station downstairs, and there was always noise coming out of it. And as I was approaching 10 years old, it changed. He got heavily involved in 6 meters, and the HF station sort of atrophied. And then he laid out the ground. He didn't ask me whether I wanted a ham radio license. He said, "I bet you can't figure out this." And I walked right into it. And through a series of "I bet you can't figure out this," I ended up getting my license after the trip to Chicago to go to the federal building to get the ticket. And I ended up putting that HF station back on the air. We had the 30-foot tower for the 6-meter gear, which was nice. So I put up an inverted V on 40. We had the HT-40, and the Helicrafters SX-110, and a handful of crystals where you could move yourself around a little bit. But let me tell you, let me feed the meter here. To this very day, when my dad and I run out of current things to talk about, he will come up with something along the lines of, "I bet you can't figure out." That's it from Louisiana. Back to you, Gary, KF5VH.
That's awesome. "I bet you can't figure out." Boy, what a hook. I love that. I think that's great. You know, it's great, Steve. That's a great... great way to come into the hobby, to have a ham, to have an Elmer at home, and you can't go wrong with that. I kind of want to do the same thing with my granddaughter, unbeknownst to her right now, but I've been thinking about this. She's a very bright young lady. She just turned 9, and I'm saying, well, you know, what if Grandpa warped her mind with ham radio, you know? It's either that or I have to buy her an electric guitar, so I'm not sure which. But her dad's already got one anyway. So I figured, you know, this might be a good thing to do. So I'm seriously thinking about Elmering Kendall and see what she wants to do with it. But that's a great story. That really is. Appreciate you checking in, and glad to hear your voice is doing better too. That's always a plus. So it sounds like you're on the mend, and we do appreciate you being there. We move along on the list. I think Six Victor was checking in there. It looked like we had a little doubling at that point. But Gordon, if you wanted to check in, grab a hold of this thing.
Okay. Thanks, Gary. Good morning to you, Steve. Interesting question. I think that's a question I'm still asking myself at my tender age. State-of-the-art is moving so rapidly, and new theories and designs and so on and so forth. As they come across the table here, I ask myself, now I wonder if I can figure this one out. You asked about the first rigs. Mine was homebrewed. I had grabbed a couple of schematics out of the ARRL library. My first transmitter was a 25-watt homemade Jobber Snoo, 807 in the final, plate modulated, of course, back in those days, and running AM. I think it was a pair of 6N7s, as I recall, and a Don't recall what the driver tube was, maybe a 6AG7, something like that. Plug-in coils. You'd open up the top lid on this bud cabinet and pull out the coils and stick another stack of coils in and peek the grid and dip the final and you were on a different band. In the other schematic that I had grabbed from the ARRL, built my first receiver also. It was a full superhet. And as far as remembering my first contact, that was 65 years ago, Gary. I don't bloomin' remember who that was. Let me feed the meter, as Steve said. Hang on. But I can tell you it was shortly after I got this homebrew stuff going, I was, and I think you've heard this story, Gary, I was sitting there testing, and I was using a 100-watt soldering iron as the dummy load. And you had to lift the cover up on this transmitter and reach in and, dip the final and all of that kind of stuff. I had, in fact, the device was a one-turn link of a wire around the coil with a light bulb on it, flashlight light bulb. So you would just peek for maximum brilliance. So I'm there going, test 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. And all of a sudden his voice comes back and he says, you're loud and clear, 20 over 9 in New York. And I'm sitting there in San Francisco. The antenna's a soldered iron. And we talked for 20 minutes. This was back, and this was on 10 meters. Back at that point, the sunspot cycle was kicking derrieres and taking names. It was just absolutely gorgeous. I think you probably could have walked across the world with a paperclip. KY6V, go ahead, Gary.
You are the only person I know that could QSO with a soldering iron. That's a great story. That really is. And 10 must have been like it was yesterday. I honestly can't recall a time when I heard 10 sounding like that. That was real experience. And again, I was only listening with the with that little $60 SDR that I have hooked up here, and literally a length of thermostat wire going into the closet. I just kind of wrapped it in the closet. It's like, it was just booming. It was just insane. But 20 minutes to New York on a soldering iron's pretty darn good there, sir. I'll tell you that much. And I did want to point out something that maybe folks listening, some of the newer hams listening, may not be really aware of the fact that in the era that Gordon is talking about, and it wasn't really all that long ago, too, it was very common. It was the only way, as a matter of fact. You didn't have transceivers. You had a transmitter, and you had a receiver. And you know, it was all modular, and everything wasn't all one piece. You didn't buy them all in one. You had a separate unit for each. And also, it was not all that uncommon. As a matter of fact, it was one time quite the norm when you built your own stuff. That was part of the hobby, was building a transmitter and building a receiver. And ARRL had some great schematics for that in the handbooks. You could really build some really cool stuff. But those were the days, as they say. It is a different world now, obviously, for good and for bad. But that was a part of the hobby that I kind of miss. And I'm sure people that were into it did too. We are talking about how you got started in ham radio. We have a long list this time around. We will move it along to KAV. Come on aboard.
Yeah, good morning and hello to everybody on the net. This is Joe, WD4KAV in Port St. Lucie, Florida. I'll try to make it short. I got started in ham radio. My interest was first ignited by a friend of my dad's whose name and call I forget, back when I was about in the fifth grade. And he had a file cabinet with the homebrew circuit boards and tubes in it, and breadboards, I guess I should say. And walked into his shack one day and heard all these voices from all over the world, and that ignited the spark. And then, to jump ahead many years, when I was a teenager, I had an old National NC-140 receiver, and I used to listen to all the hams on 40 and 80 meters and thought they sounded like pretty much a nice bunch of people, and I'd like to join them. So I went to the customs house in Boston after studying the code and memorizing circuit boards on oscillators, etc., on flashcards, and working with another ham. Let's drop a minute. And didn't pass the test, was crushed, went off to high school, went through high school, or continued through high school. Got into broadcasting after I got out of college, jumping ahead more years, was into CB at that time too. And a bunch of us that used to get together on Channel 21 decided to go off and get our ham licenses. And we all passed. I'm the only surviving batch. I'm the only surviving one. And I was first licensed in 1977. Let's drop again. And I was also working in commercial broadcasting, and I got friendly with the contract engineers, and they were hams. And to make another long story short, they helped explain some things to me, radio systems, phasing units, etc. I went off and got a first-class commercial ticket, which you had to have back then, to measure base currents, which I had to do. Skipping ahead a few more years, I was a dispatcher for the fire department. I bought a copy of Radio Shack's 5 to 1,000 watts, taught myself the theory, and worked on the code, went down to the customs house in Miami, got a general. That was in, 78, 79. And, hang on again. After that, I won't go through all the torturous trails and trials and tribulations, but I was hooked, and here I am today with an extra, which I got in 2010 after debating and wondering if I could do it. Like you say, can you figure this out? That's a very convoluted tale on how I got into ham radio, and I've loved every minute of it. Back to Ned. This is WD4KAV.
Hey, Joe, great story. A couple of questions for you. In commercial broadcasting, what did you do, number one? And number two, didn't it feel great when you got your extra? wasn't that like a big deal? Because it sure was around here. So what did you do in commercial broadcasting, Joe?
Oh, I did a little bit of everything. I worked in West Palm Market. I was a combo man, which means you do everything. You do the readings. You run the control board. I was an announcer. Came up with a progressive rock FM format. Had some success with that on a little 3-kilowatt FM. Basically announcing and a little bit of engineering, being a chief operator, which is as close as you can get to being an engineer without actually being one. And let's see, what was the other question? Go ahead.
The other question was, didn't it feel great when you got your extra?
Oh, yes, it did. Yes, it did. And talk about things you have today to help you study that you didn't have 20, 30, 40 years ago. The way I studied for that, and I hadn't really boned up on the theory in years, so I had to do a lot of unearthing of distant memories and dusty math problems that I hadn't thought about. I had an iPod, and I would take the test at work, at the DOT where I work now, and then come home at night and go to ham test online and take it again there. And to make another long story short, I did that for about 6 months and convinced myself I finally had figured out enough and remembered enough to go get the extra. And I know when I went to take it, I was so nervous when I first sat down. I thought, geez, is this written in English? Because I was just like, you know, nervous beyond all reason. And I thought, you know this, settle down, relax. And I went through the questions and passed. And you could have, if somebody walked up and poked me, I guess I probably would have exploded. I was just walking on air for about 2 or 3 days. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was pretty much the same experience here. I still have my third endorsed hanging on the wall, although expired many, many moons ago. I was in broadcasting for 12 years. I was on the air and program director of a radio station. So, Nice to have you there. That was an accomplishment, and I have this august body to thank for helping me get that extra. The South Cars Outreach. I'm going to just plug that, because if you've ever thought about advancing your license, get on that website, look up the South Cars Outreach. They're doing it a little differently now, you know, where you can just access the recordings, but when things change, they'll go to the live courses. But it will help you. It is worth it. It is a great tool to use, and I think my the fact that I have my extra certainly got a lot easier because of those South Cars Outreach courses. That's for sure. But thanks Joe for checking in, and we will move along to IEL on the list. IEL, come on aboard.
Well, okay, I won't get into too much about how I got started. What I want to tell you is how I got started right here on South Cars. When I came to Peterborough, I met up with the folks from the Peterborough Amateur Radio Club, and of course there was Bill, VE3MEW. And next thing I know, he was talking about South Cars and you folks here. And I think it was a week ago or so, I tried to check in and got welcomed wholeheartedly to the South Cars people. I'll just take a moment and tell you that I've been licensed since 1976. Started fooling around with radio in 1974, but with the Scarborough Amateur Radio Club at my back, I got this call sign, VE3IEL. I'm ever lucky, and I've held that ever since. Like you folks, in broadcasting for about 40 years, my official title, I think, was Gopher. I think that was what they gave me. And then later on, I got the title Tape 8. And I think that later on I got the title Master Control Switcher or something. I don't know, something like that, but it was a very advanced title that I finally came up with. So I'm not going to hold it, because my dear Carol and I, we do have to get out. So after this little bit of a chat with you folks and saying hi, and I'm going to be thanking Bill again the next time I see him here in Peterborough for getting me on South Cars. Okay, now it's back to you.
Well, I've certainly held that title of Gopher. I remember that well. Yeah, I remember that very well. But great to have you along. And, you know, it's funny. Whether this was just unique to this net this morning or what, but I have a broadcast background, and Joe and you and Gordon, of course, and I don't know who else out there may be, but seems like a lot of us do have that that background. I would just kind of love to know, you know, what percentage of our participants have been broadcasting. That'd be kind of an interesting thing to see. We are talking, though, this morning about how you got started in ham radio. So we're kind of throw it open just to any stories now. I was looking at the earlier first rig and first contact, and you can certainly throw that in there. And I forgot about Steve. Steve, a thousand pardons. You know what happens, you know, it's like when you get old and infirm, your mind goes, yeah, and Steve as well, so we're upping the percentage as well here. But throwing that open to just about any experience, your first time around in ham radio, how did you get started, you know, who helped you, what inspired you, anything. We'll take a round of check-ins right now as we continue the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. This is South Cars, and I'm KC2RMO.
Me check. Did I mean?
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Okay, got a couple that time around. We'll pick it up with ZIV.
Yeah. Jimmy. I have to remember to do everything correct or individuals with hearing impediments cannot understand me because I have a speech impediment. What do I want to start this time? Oh, a question I want to start. Let me ask a question or two this time around. The question I wanted to ask Ms. Sunshine prior to the net was the abbreviation for choo-choo, like a choo-choo train. I know it's not C-O-C-O. It's cuckoo, I think. I'm cuckoo for cuckoo bubs. But choo-choo is what I'm wanting to put in there. And I need abbreviation because C-H-E-W will not fit twice or whatever. So I'm sort of looking for the abbreviation of that. And I was wondering, I have on this PC of mine that I'm on, I have the transmission whenever I'm key. Let me plug the PGT here. Every time I key the PGT, it will go boop on my end. That way I know that I'm disconnected and that I'm, not still transmitting. There's a lot of times on this PC that I'll hit that and it doesn't work, and then I'm stuck on there and don't mean to do that. So I wonder if you happen to hear that, is that going over the transmission or not? And that's my two questions for this time around. And for your question, at TS-440, it was the first rig I had. Licensed in 1994 with Tech, Tech Plus in 96, General in 97. Didn't go no further because I don't know code proficiently. And so I thought I shouldn't go for extra. And I ended up being I don't mean any bad harm for anyone that is an extra that does not know the code proficiently. It's just my personal opinion. Inline to the V. Back to that for now.
Well, thank you, sir. As far as Choo-Choo X, maybe that'll work. I don't know. If Kathy is listening and she has something for that, I'm sure she'll check in with it. As far as that push-to-talk goes, you can go into your Echolink setup, if I'm understanding your problem correctly. You can go into your Echolink setup, and you can designate keys to key that PTT. So, for instance, the common way to do it in a Windows situation is to set that right-hand control key as your push-to-talk. If you have a Mac... Pardon me. If you have a Mac, you use the Command plus Return keys, and that'll key it for you. Or you can just use the mouse. That's what I use on mine. Because we're back to the Mac for this, because it has a better sounding transmit audio on it. But that may help you there with those. So give those a try, and we will. Hopefully help you in that regard. We moved to Ohio, and Rick, are you getting that snowstorm out there? That was the one we were supposed to get this weekend that we didn't get. We got a couple of flakes, but how are you faring out there? Go ahead.
This is N1VXP. Nope, all we're getting is a little bit of freezing rain. Quite a crazy little thing because... just a little misty rain. I didn't think it was that bad out. I went out to a local restaurant and came outside and took one step and started sliding all over the place. Black ice, oh boy, you talk about a mess. But it's raining hard enough. It's just maintaining a wet little bit of ice. You can actually see some of the sleet mixed in on the surface, but... They're saying still a chance of maybe 1 to 2 inches of snow. Nothing major, but I don't really want to believe, you know, that they're cutting this storm down. I have a feeling we might end up getting something. How I got involved in ham radio was, back in 1995, I had a friend, always used to walk by where I was working, and one day he actually was talking on his 2-meter handheld, and, he stopped and, when he was done talking, he says, "Oh, this is ham radio." And my impression, I thought, was, well, you have to learn code. And he says, "No, you don't need to learn code." So I got done working, and I followed him back to his house, and he had his ham shack set up. And he showed me, he says, "Oh, this is how ham radio works." And I'm like, "Okay, quite interesting. Let me drop for a second." So, he showed me how to get on there, had me as third party talking to a couple other guys in the area. And we actually, he got on to 6 meters, and next thing you know, there was an opening. And I was like, wow. Talked to somebody in, I think it was in Baltimore, which really, when he, explained to me, he says, "Oh, that's not very far. For 6 meters, we could do that a lot more often." But I thought it was a great idea, and I was like, "Oh, yeah, this could be a lot of fun." So, he said, "Well, go to the two sources to get the book and study it, and take your test, and you can get on the air." So a month later, I did the studying. I went and took the test. Got my ticket in October of 1995, which I stopped and think about. Well, next year is, that's 20 years. Wow. Time has gone by so quick. But as far as activity, I got involved. Initially, I got involved with a couple of different 2-meter repeater groups with their nets and activities. And I said, "Oh, wow, this is a lot of fun." And one of the guys told me about getting on the traffic nets, and I said, "Okay." I got involved in that. One thing led to another. I ended up being net control on. Actually, it was two different traffic nets, and got well involved in that. Actually, I feel like I burned myself out in a way, getting too involved. Let me drop one more second. But, it was the idea of just overdoing it, and then I learned the lesson, don't volunteer too much. You'll end up getting to the point where you just don't want to do it anymore, or you just feel, you really just end up having more of a, how would I say it, it'd be more frustrating than what it's worth. So I said, okay, let me back out of that for a while. I got involved with Sky Warren, and I had one incident that I think back and I say, wow, quite an experience. I was actually volunteering at a music festival on a weekend, and I just happened to have my handheld radio with me, and I knew that there was a chance for some severe weather that day. But, I just never thought about it. And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and all of a sudden, we had one little thunderstorm come through, and I was like, okay, this has got to be it. And I was, volunteering, and all of a sudden, the sky really got dark, and I was like, uh-oh, we're going to be in for a bad one. So I knew the Skywarn repeater to get onto. And I checked in the net and told my location, and they said, we've got to advise you. You got some pretty severe weather coming through. Should be hitting your area in about a half hour. And I thought, well, let me find out. Let me drop one more second. So I ended up getting a hold of the festival director, I found him, and I said, you know, hey, I think we got a problem coming up. And he had not been really too, how would I say it? He wasn't really really well informed as to what ham radio amounts to. He had the idea, well, they just talk on the radio and, you know, nothing serious. And I said, well, now I think we got to have a little talk. So I didn't realize the mayor of the mayor of the town was right there with him. I knew the mayor was well informed on ham radio, and he recognized me, and he says to the director, he says, now pay attention to this guy. He's got something important to tell you. Listen. So I said, you got some severe weather coming in. You might want to do something about maybe shutting down the festival for a short time, but that's up to you. And he started to walk away, and the mayor turned around and told him, get back over here. Listen to this guy. He's got something serious. Listen. No sooner that day, now that conversation hit, the wind and the rain and the thunderstorm came in, and this just tore everything apart. And it was to the point where he informed all of his volunteers, hey, shut down. Get to safety. And it was such a scary thing, but after the storm was over, the mayor came over to me, shook my hand, and said, thanks. He says, that's why I like you guys being around. It was my feeling that just the idea of knowing ham radio really does pay off. Let me drop one more second. You know, just the idea that ham radio does pay off with its activities, that, you know, it's just an experience. I've had other Skywarn situations that not as severe, but bad enough, and I just say it's a learning type of thing. Some people think, oh, it's just hobbies. You just don't learn anything, but I think overall in life, it kind of brings out really a lot more things to think about, and kind of, I don't know if it's, I had a cousin of mine said to me, he says, you know, it sounds like you kind of learned a little thing in life, slow down, take it easy, but don't get involved unless you really have something to do, and don't think because you're a ham operator you can go do everything. And I said, well, okay, no problem. But I look back at ham radio as been kind of a eye-awakening experience that, you know, if I didn't have a hobby, I don't know what I'd be doing today. But I enjoy it. And 1-2-XP back to net control.
Well, thank you, Rick. You know, it's Skywarn. It's easy for me to say. Skywarn is great. And if you're not familiar with Skywarn, look it up. It's something that everybody can do. The training's very easy. You take a quick course. I think I sat for 2 hours. I think it was to get my card. And you have a representative of the National Weather Service come down. They teach you some basics about storms, how it all works, and they teach you how to observe, and they teach you how to report. And it is a really valuable thing that with just a little bit of effort you can do that can pay off big, just like what Rick was talking about, where you can really make a contribution. So it really, you know, it is really an easy contribution you can make. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It's well worth it, and it has a really cool logo too. I love that tornado. I have my Skywarn card in my truck, tucked up under my visor, ready to go at all times. It is just a cool thing to be involved with. We are, thank you, Rick, for checking in, and hopefully that storm will miss you as it's missing us. I know they came about Thursday, I guess it was, with the with the hazardous weather outlook on the National Weather Service, and they were talking about the potential for a big storm this weekend, and it just kind of vaporized the next day. It was like, you know, oh, we really didn't say that, you know, so I was like, great, you know. But all we got was a couple of flakes up here, so maybe that's all you're going to get there, too. We're talking this morning about how you got started in ham radio, whether it's your first rig, your first experience with a contact, or who got you started or how you got started. I think we got a round or two left, so let's try it. Let's see who's out there. We'll take check-ins right now as we continue on the Sunday Morning Rag 2.
KC9, YZR.
Okay, we have YZR checking in. Anybody else?
I'll take another one if I may, and that's going to be number 9-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-
please.
KC2RML, KC9YZR. Okay, good morning. Hello, everyone. And, I first started listening to shortwave broadcasts, and I know it must have been ham radio operators, but I didn't know it at the time. I think I realized it later, though. Back in the early 70s, I got a hold of a Wartz Airline 10-band receiver, and back then, I think once I even figured out it was hams I was listening to, I think I assumed that you had to be 18, and I didn't know that you didn't have to be 18 to get a license. And so then I thought to myself, well, even for CB radio, I had to have a license at 18 years old. You had to be 18. So I thought, well, maybe I could talk my father into getting a CB radio license. So I did that, and he's only willing to do that because he had a CB in his truck. He's a truck driver. He worked for Forest Glass, it was called at the time, but later it was called Weathershield. And he decided to get a license so I could operate under his in the early 70s. And then in high school, there was a science teacher who was a ham, and he had a ham station set up in the school there, and they had a license for the school. And I'm actually thinking about maybe applying for that school license for a vanity call, because he's let the license drop. I see it's available, so I don't know, maybe I'll be getting that call. I don't know, it's a WB9 call. Anyway, he got us interested in that. See, at first we like to talk on CB radio on AM, and then, of course, they kind of relaxed the rules and regulations a bit, and the language started getting bad. But at first it was nice. It was good. But then we decided, well, AM is getting bad, so we went to sideband, and so we operated on sideband and had a WTC, Wisconsin Tri-County Club, and we were on sideband there for a while. But then we thought, well, we'd like better range, and it was illegal to talk beyond 150 miles, illegal to talk skip, and he had this S9 steady noise on there all day long, and couldn't hardly talk across the street. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get into amateur radio and stuff like that, because maybe we could get away from the foul language that started up, and also that steady rushing sound all the time, and it made it hard to communicate, and it was illegal to talk beyond 150 miles direct, and you weren't supposed to talk skip at all. And so I'm going to drop. And so my best friend and I decided to get into ham radio because I found out in high school you didn't need to be 18. I didn't know that, you know. I didn't know you didn't have to be 18 to get your ham radio license. And the science teacher got us interested in it, too, because he was a ham and had that station set up in the high school. But it was too late for me. I went into the Army right after that in 1977, and I didn't get around to getting my license. And after I came out of the Army, I went down to Florida for a couple of years, 81 to 83. And when I decided to come back to Wisconsin, that's when I found out my best friend got his ham radio license. So then I got mine in 1986. And my first contact, I don't remember if it was on my best friend's radio or transceiver or my transceiver, but it was to a guy in Ohio. But like I said, I don't remember if it was the first contact I made when I used my best friend's transceiver, because that's all I could use in 86. I didn't have mine yet. I didn't get mine until June of 87. But I can't remember if the guy in Ohio was my first contact on my own transceiver or if it was on my best friend's transceiver. Of course, back then we were filling out logs all the time. And my first HF rig was the Drake TR-4. That was an interesting way we got into ham radio, though. It was mainly to get more range, and more power is legal if you need it, and get away from that steady rushing sound all the time. It sounds like 10,000 signals on there, the S9's noise, and you couldn't talk across the street, and it was legal to talk skip and stuff like that. It wasn't illegal like on CB, so we just wanted to get into amateur radio for that reason. And I got out of it in 2000 after 14 years, because the last 5 years I was having all sorts of bad incidences. And I felt like, oh, there's only 200 bad hams, and why did I have to meet 195 of them? But after 12 and a half years, last year I decided to get back into it. But like Gordon there with that Drake TR4, I did have to tune for the dip and stuff like that. But didn't need an external tuner, though. That was one thing about that, with that internal Pi network that Drake had. You could just tune away there. But it's been very interesting, and I guess I'll hand it back over to you for now, KC2RMO, KC9YZR.
Well, thank you, Bernie. Yeah, that's, you know, my first contact was out in your neck of the woods. I talked to somebody out in Wisconsin, and I thought I was hitting the moon, you know. A lot of folks had Drakes for a first rig. I didn't. I had a IC735 for my first viable rig, my first rig that worked. But I thought, you know, like I had just conquered the world. I'm talking to some guy out in Racine, and it just blew my mind. I remember, you know, you painted a good picture, you know, of growing up. I was growing up a little earlier than you, sounds like, but my discovery of ham radio came in the early 60s through the actually, a little earlier than that, when you count some of the experiences with the neighborhood, like the guy next door tuning in Sputnik for me, you know, is 57. So, but you know, late 50s through forever, you know. But I remember everybody in that neighborhood was either a ham or had shortwave. And a lot of shortwave receivers, and I remember listening to those weird sounds, and I distinctly remember being able to tune in numbers stations, and I'd love to do a net on them sometime. I don't know if anybody's familiar with them, but they're spy stations, and they still use them. There's a whole technique to what you hear, and you'll hear they're just very weird and sometimes spooky sounding transmissions. Maybe some night or sometime we'll do a net on those. But good story, Bernie, and thank you for checking in. We will move it along to ZIV. Come on aboard.
Yeah. When do I start this time? Anyway, you know, actually, a gentleman called Elvis, he calls himself Elvis, Count the Money, CTM, here locally, with a guy got me started. He calls himself Elvis, has a big Elvis collection, got me interested. He's on a citizen band radio, or should I make a band, as I call it, and then I heard Dano, UWE, Rolling Stone. He back and forth from Channel 12 to ham radio, you know. Basically, man, they finally went on to stay on ham radio or amateur radio. I ran Channel 1, you know, 26.595, whatever. I ran Channel 1, you know. I said, this is when I ran over my train and all that, and when I came home, and, I started on Channel 1, further station away from 19, and I called it G.O.D., God Squad, Channel 1, and I said, you know, no G.D. or no F, you know, this is for serious local communication, and this one gentleman, Marion Dunn, old Papa Goose, Roll Hole, encouraged me to go talk to EIC. And you'll know where it is, more of a serious communication device. Instead of trying to make, because someone said, you know, this is just a joke box. You come home and get it wasted, and yeah, get drunk and together, and cause, you know, havoc, you know. But ever since I started around this community, everyone has disliked me. And I don't know why. Probably because of what I do. I know I proclaim the name above all names. They used to call me the Insane Dwayne because I got run over by the train. Now they call me the Spiritually Sane Dwayne. But some say I'm a big pain because all I do is proclaim the name of all names. Praise his name. That'll be it for now, I suppose. If I get another chance, I might. If not, it's okay too. Thank you very much, sir. I don't know how long this goes, if you got a certain time you have to quit or what. I can do this all day. This is wonderful. Actually, I skipped church to do this. Although my rival didn't answer his phone, so he must have knew I was going to need the day off anyway. Yeah, I don't know. November 9, Zulu India Victor, in 9 ZLV.
And we thank you, sir. It's good to have you aboard, and as always. So, thanks for being there. We are well into our second hour of this net, and let's see if there's any more checkouts. Do maybe one more round anyway. Let's see if we've got anybody left out there that wants to check in. We're talking about how you got started in ham radio, or you know, any of your early experiences, your background, what led you to getting your license, talking about your first rig and any first early experience that you might have had. But we'll do it one more time. Let's see if we can get one more round of check-ins as we continue the Sunday Morning Rag Chew here on South Cars. I'm KC2RMO looking for check-ins right now.
This is KK4RAL. Kilo Alpha Victor again.
Kilo Delta 8 Uniform X-ray Uniform.
Well, I got three to wrap it down with, and we'll pick it up with RAL. Come on aboard.
Yeah, let's jump in there real quick. KK4RAL. This is Harold at this end in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Doing some storm treatment in the yard here today, and listen to you guys chit-chatting on the air. Good morning, good afternoon to all of you. Y'all sound very well down here. I don't know what your locations are, but doesn't matter, you sound good. Quickly, in regards to my ham radio experience, I'm an oldie. I just turned that golden age of 65, and believe it or not, I just got my ham license, my check license back in early last year, about a year ago. But I've always been a listener for a number of years, since I'm going to say the mid to late 50s. Listen to radios, and like I heard someone else say earlier, that they got attachment because their fathers were associated with CB radios. Between my dad's CB radios and my uncle's, of course, I got into that a little bit. Then later on, I worked at a radio TV repair shop and worked for a gentleman that had probably one of the original ham licenses that was given out. He was very knowledgeable, and he said, here's an old TV chassis, here's a couple tubes, here's some silver wire, go build you a transmitter. So I went together, and this is the very early 60s then, built my first 75-watt transmitter from out of the amateur radio handbook years ago. Then got into high school, and finally got my first novice license. Never pursued it because back then my background family just didn't have the the spare change to go out and buy nice transceivers and stuff. So kind of went to the wayside for a number of years until I started working at my present company, and one of the gentlemen I worked with, he was a ham operator, and it's my first novice license expired, he gave me my second one and received that. And then here about a year ago, met another fellow amateur operator. He had a tech, and he...
Well, that sounded like a timeout to me. Let's try again. If you can latch it again, RAL, come on aboard one more time.
Yeah, I met with a fellow that I work with out where I presently am employed. He was an amateur, and he talked me into getting back into it. So last year in March, I believe I took my tech license, and a couple months later, I got my generals. Now I'm zeroing in on my extra class. I don't have anything more than two meters right now. I did buy a Icon 718 here a couple weeks ago, and I'm kind of listening to that past couple of nights, figuring out how to use it all. I'll get on the air one of these days on HF and see what's around. Other than that, I'm happy to be a ham in the association with all of you. And the Skywarn Association, I think that's great for everyone to be attached to it. It certainly takes changes the way we look at everything. We're a little more important than what most think. Anyway, back to you. I'm going to clear out and get busy on my stormwater drains here. KK4RAL, back to network. Have a great day. 73s.
Hey, thanks for checking in. Don't worry about doing this late in life. Better late than never, right? You know, I have a 718 myself. I love it. It's not the fanciest rig in the world, but it does everything you want it to do, and it does it very well. So I think you're going to enjoy it. I use it for everything from rag chewing to digital modes, and it hasn't failed me. It's a really great basic radio, and I think you will genuinely enjoy it. It's a very good radio. Work on that extra, I'll tell you. Once you get it, it's the next best thing to being king for a day. It really is great. It's an accomplishment, and definitely worth going for. Thanks for checking in. We move along to KAV. Come on aboard on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew.
Yeah, hello again. This is Joe, WD4KAV in Port St. Lucie. And that other fellow that was on, I think he's a little bit off frequency, RAL. He needs to be on 146.550, if he can copy me, I don't know. Anyway, the reason I checked in again was to just pass on tidbits. The first rig I saw, first transceiver I saw operated on HF was a TS-520, and I lusted after that for a long time. And my first rig was a Galaxy 5, if anybody knows what those are. And that was an experience to operate that because of the concentric circles on the tuning dial. In fact, one time I ended up operating out of band unintentionally, and a Canadian gentleman came on and said, I say, old man, I think you're out of your band limits. I said, oops. And then I got a note from the FCC, and I told them what happened, and they said, okay. So that was my one big oops. And let's see, the first new rig I owned was a Henry Radio Tempo 1, if anybody knows what that is. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven with that radio. And I also have a 718 and a TS-590, totally different radios. 718 is a great workhorse basic radio. I picked that up after being inactive for several years and love it. I'll never get rid of it. The 590 has the best receiver I've ever heard, but anyway, I'm rambling, so I'll turn it back to that WD4KAV.
Well, I have to tell you, you have exactly the same taste in radios I do. I love that 718. As I said, I agree with you wholeheartedly. That is a that is a great workhorse radio. It is, if you're only going to have one rig, if you want something that's going to do everything for you, within limits, it's a great choice. It really is. It just does the job. And it's nothing fancy. It's just a good little basic radio. And yes, I want a TS-590S very badly. That's on the list eventually, but I love that radio. It is very appealing to me, and I've heard nothing but great things about the receiver on that. So someday in the future, it'll be sitting next to the 718. But I agree with you. Never going to get rid of that 718. It's just too darn good. It really is. Thanks for checking in. We move it along to UXU, Union, X-Ray, Union. Come on aboard.
KC2RMO. Good morning, Gary. Good morning to everybody on the net from KD8UXU, Roy in Sterling Heights, Michigan, Metro Detroit. Well, just tell you we got some snow overnight, and we'll leave it at that on the weather. Talking about how did I get involved in amateur radio? Well, first of all, you need to know that I just recently joined the membership roster on South Cars. Had a QSO with your staff member, Doug, from Fort Myers, Florida, within the last week, and he invited me to join up, so I did that. And thank you very much for that. And, well, I just became a ham in mid-May of 2013. And took my tech and general exams in early May, a couple weeks earlier than that, and got my general license and got my call sign in mid-May. And the interest in ham radio went all the way back to about 1960. I'm 65 years old, by the way, okay? And became a shortwave listener at that time. Had an interest in amateur radio, had taken out ARRL study guides from the local library, etc., but never really did anything about getting a license at that time, as it turned out, and the years went by, and 50 years went by. Now let me drop it for a second and come back. And KD8UXU back with you. Found out about the Baofeng UV-5R transceivers, and of course you have to have an amateur radio license to communicate on 2 meters and the 440 bands. So I set myself about the task of studying for and getting a license, and so here I am. And I must say, I've enjoyed the hobby immensely. I knew I would, but I really have greatly. Found out about Echolink and got in on some Echolink nets, which enabled me to communicate with a lot of different hams rather than just trying it on my own per se, and I'm really enjoying that. Well, in a nutshell, that's the story. I'll just add that I am net control on a couple of Echolink nets off of the Echolink World Conference server, IRLP 9251 Western Reflector. First off is the Worldwide Friendship Net, which is on every day of the week at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm net control on Mondays. I'll be on the air tomorrow with our friends there and anybody who can check in. And also, I'm backup net control on the World Friendship Net, which is on at 2000 hours Eastern Time, Mondays through Fridays. So with that, that's my story in a nutshell. And I just love the hobby. I've met a lot of new people and made some good friends on the radio. And with that, I want to wish everybody a great Sunday today and a great week coming up. From KD8UXU, Roy in Sterling Heights, Michigan, Metro Detroit. And back over to you, Gary, at Net Control.
Thank you, Roy. And it looks like you're getting the, or you got the snow that we didn't get, so that's okay. You can have it. We've had plenty. But, it's funny how many folks come into the hobby after, a 40 or 50-year hiatus. I'm I'm 62. I got my my license a while ago, about 7 years ago. You know, you can go through these long stretches, and it's still in you. You know, you still have the desire, and it's great. You finally get to a point in your life when you can. Or you can do something about it, and you get that license, and it feels real good. That's for sure. Those bow fangs. I've got one sitting right here on my desk. It's like you can't say no to a $30 radio. You simply can't, and it works very well. I've got to tell you. So I've got the Yaesu in the truck. I've got the bow fang up here, and what the heck? If anything, it's a great spare. But really works very, very well. But good to have you along. And hey, this has been a good net this morning. I really enjoyed this. I hope you did too. This was a really good topic, and I want to thank everybody that joined in. It's certainly a universal experience. I mean, we all had to start somewhere, and some great stories too. So. Again, thanks for your participation, and you guys all have a great week. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIPnet schedules and general information may be found on the voip.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Gary, KC2RMO, saying 73, and closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.